month of August usually signifies the beginning of the fishing season. Things are a little bit different this year due to some fish forecasting. Joining me is the Midcoast fish biologist with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, John Spangler. And John, I first noticed this a few months ago, going over how they were talking about, you know, maybe the cancellation of the salmon season on the Siuslaw River. Tell me a little bit about, you know, the spring and what you saw in the spring leading up to, you know, the August season.
Well, typically, George, on our planning processes occur in the spring for the fall fisheries. And that's when we get the forecast for returns to these coastal basins. And that usually comes out about April. We have internal meetings to discuss the fisheries, what the data is telling us, and then we look at how the data is applied within the Coastal Multi-Species Conservation Management Plan. And within the Chinook section of the plan, there's a Chinook sliding scale. And the forecasts and last year's escapement estimates kind of place us in a box for regulations. And years where we have really good abundance, we're looking at a regular season of 2 salmon per day, 20 per year. Years where we see that abundance is dropping and we fall into the next category lower, it's a 1 per day, 5 per year. But there's also the critical abundance threshold that if we're following below that line, the basin is supposed to be closed. And we follow below that line back in 2020. We went with some very restrictive regulations and just barely saved enough fish to get on spawning grounds that we were just above critical abundance. But then this year, everything dropped again, according to our forecasts. So it dropped us in below the critical abundance line. The conservation plan directs us to close that fishery for this year.
Now, I imagine different rivers see different levels of fish. Is there anything that predicts why one river might get more or less than another, or is it pretty much down, you know, all along the coastal areas?
Well, it's been down since about 2015 was a really good year, and then it started dropping off, and that was attributed to a lot of these marine survival indicators. We had the blob that set up in 2015-16, a very strong El Nino that came rolling through about the same time, marine heat waves. So some of these stocks that if they get caught in the wrong place in the ocean, they may not perform as well as some of the others. And what we're generally seeing is that Siuslaw and South are not performing as well as some of the North Coast basins. But even this year, the Tillamook is falling into a conservation closure for wild fish. So we're really hitting into some of these unprecedented situations with basin closures and restricted fisheries.
What about the ocean fishing per se? I mean, does the ODFW have any say in what happens along the coastline within so many miles, or is that something different? Because that's not being closed, correct?
Correct. That's all managed through the Pacific Fishery Management Council, which ODFW is very active and involved in. But these summer ocean fisheries for Chinook, we're fishing on Sacramento Klamath River stocks of fish that are coming by our coast. Our Chinook go up into southeast Alaska, northern British Columbia to rear, and they're intercepted in northern fisheries. So that's all managed and governed through the Pacific Salmon Treaty.
Now, fishermen I've talked to talk about the difference between, you know, the spring salmon and the fall salmon, saying, oh, you know, one's better than the other, and I don't know anything about that. Can you tell me if there's, what is the difference between, say, the different species of salmon and how they're designated?
Well, if we look at just Chinook, the time that they come into the rivers dictates the run time. If they come in the spring, they're spring Chinook. We have fish that come in the summer. Those get categorized some summer Chinook. And then we have our main body on the coast is the fall Chinook. Now, it's kind of a gradient where there's genetic markers that get these fish to migrate in the spring. There's some that are somewhat hybridized with fall and spring fish that are summer returning fish, and then the main body in the fall. So anglers really like those spring fish just because they're very fatty fish. They taste wonderful, and people like to target those fish. But when it comes to salmon, even in the fall, people just want to get out and go fishing.
So do we know the state of the salmon as far as the ocean goes? I mean, are there still schools out there that are just, because you mentioned the El Nino, that are just not coming up? or is it just the fact that there's such a smaller amount now of these salmon?
It's just there's a smaller amount. They don't, when fish decide to come into the rivers to spawn, they're coming in to spawn. They're not going to decide to stay out for an extra year. They're genetically geared to come back and spawn.
And
so when we look at ocean characteristics, you know, NOAA has a great stoplight chart that gives us all kinds of different variables in the ocean, whether it's being a good ocean, a marginal ocean, a poor ocean. And their stoplight indicator chart shows about 2015, it really went south on us, and it was not a very productive ocean. And that carried clear on through to 2020. And so 2021 was one of the best years for the ocean. 2022 is looking okay. So if we get good oceans, these fish respond positively to them.
So the idea is to not allow fishing so that you can have more spawning and therefore have more fish for the next several years.
Right. You know, more fish we can put on spawning grounds, more eggs we get deposited in gravel, more smolts we get out. And that just speeds your recovery.
Now, is there a hatchery for Chinook too, or is it just dependent upon the ocean levels?
In the Siuslaw, there are no hatchery releases. It's all natural production, and it's been a very strong program down there in population for years. And so this is really one of the first times we've seen the Siuslaw population drop below a critical threshold for, you know, three out of the last 4 years, and a forecast is below a critical threshold this year.
Does the fall Chinook ban kind of affect other fish that are out there? I mean, are fishermen still allowed to fish as long as they don't catch Chinook? Are there any other fish that are subject to this?
Well, certainly coho come into the bay, and in some years, very large numbers. This year, we closed the basin to all salmon fishing just to avoid impacts on coho. The mid-coast is one of the most restricted on coho seasons this year, limited to 15% impact for all coho fisheries in the ocean and inland. So it really didn't give us very many fish that we could put on the table. And if we did have the coho fishery, we would fall below a 75% full seeding criteria that we really look at meeting to get that habitat seeded and production for the next season.
Well, and I get to that, I guess skilled anglers are very adept at knowing the differences between the fishes, but then you get the recreational angler out there who might not know as much that could, you know, could inadvertently affect the population by grabbing the wrong fish, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, correct. You know, a lot of anglers know the difference between Chinook and coho. They're fairly easy to tell the difference, but there's always a few that get excited and, you know, they caught salmon, they bring it back, it's the wrong one.
Now, obviously, you talked about forecasting before we came on the air about being a crystal ball. What do you see, you know, what indicators, what markers are there to give you hope or to continue this way it's going over the next, you know, couple seasons?
Well, the way our forecasts are work, we need to go out on spawning grounds, get a lot of scale samples so that we can recreate that run back into the base and see what the run strength is for each year. And these fish are coming back from age 2 to 6. And then once they get the age data, then they run the models. And that gives us an output on each age class and then a full forecast for what we expect to come back.
What kind of a sampling do they take? I mean, do they base their numbers on, you know, a certain amount of fish that they look at, or do they just kind of, I don't want to say happenstance because I know that's not probably what happens,
right.
But based on how many numbers do they have to get an accurate look at it, or at least a forecastable look at it?
What they do on their surveys, these are standard surveys that we've done through the most productive Chinook habitat in the basin. Every Chinook that they find, they sample. So some years we may get 250 scales. Another year we may get 400. The more scales we get, the better the run reconstruction is. But still, when you're looking at forecasting, there's a lot of other variables in the ocean that we just can't account for.
Right, and a lot of that could be weather, like you said, global warming, things like that are uncontrollable or at least not within, you know, the acceptable range of being able to do something about.
Right. These are things with climate change coming through now. and it's hitting us, you know, fairly hard that we just haven't encountered these situations before. So we're still adapting and learning as we go along. But we've also had inland habitat conditions with droughts. You know, in 2015, we had a pretty strong drought that affected these the smolt production. 2019, we had very low water levels in the fall, where we had to close upper tidewater areas to try to protect these very vulnerable holding fish.
What other kind of obstacles are there in the way for the Chinook? Now, this might be totally wrong, but I heard something, I think, on the Columbia about the pike minnow. That's not something that we have worried down here, is it?
There are pike minnow in the Siuslaw, but it's not the same as the Columbia River, where there's large dams that create habitat that's very beneficial to pike minnow. And a point and a bottleneck where these fish have to go through ladders or passage facilities where the pike minnow can, you know, just wait for them. The Siuslaw is very open, more natural basin, so I don't see where pike minnow is an issue on the Siuslaw.
Now, I understand that up on the Columbia, they have a bounty on them. I guess, is that only for the Columbia River?
That's only for the Columbia River.
All right, so we don't have to worry about that issue down here. Some of the other things that I may not be touching on, some things you might want to share. Obviously, you know, you talked about drought conditions when the water levels are low. That's going to affect things like that. What are some other things that our listener might need to know about, you know, why this was necessary at this time?
Well, at this time, the populations have dropped. You know, we've got 4 out of 5 years that are looking like they're below a conservation threshold. And the conservation threshold is the minimum we can get down to and still look at recovery and sustainability of the stocks. I think when we look at these basins, some of it's habitat in the freshwater. The better freshwater habitat, the better production. But then in some ways we are, you know, open to the ocean, just the whims of the ocean and that environment, that we're going to drive a lot of these populations. A couple percent increase in survival from the ocean means several thousand, many thousand fish coming back to these basins.
What makes one particular type of fish different from another in that it can both survive in a saltwater and a freshwater environment? As a biologist, I'm thinking you probably know the answer to that.
A lot of it's just that evolutionary adaptation, to where these fish are not going to survive and grow large if they stay in freshwater. So they've adapted to take on the marine environment where there's an abundance of food, and they can grow large and be much more successful. It's kind of the difference between what we see in the size of a Chinook and the size of a cutthroat. You know, it's really that ocean productivity and resources that they've adapted and evolved to grow to a very large size.
Historically speaking, you know, decades ago, what were the limits much different on what anglers could bring in than, say, in the last couple of decades?
Now, they've been at 2 salmon per day, you know, 20 per year since, I think it was late 80s. Before that, it was as high as 40 salmon for an annual bag limit. But we also had a wild steelhead that could be harvested back then. So things have changed where we don't keep wild steelhead in most basins now. Our regulations are cutting back a little bit on how many salmon are taken a day. And with our conservation plans, when we see these downturns coming, it pulls us back a little bit more so that we're not going to cause these fish to fall into an extinction mode.
Now, is the regulation sort of on an honesty basis? I mean, versus someone who's fishing out in the ocean that comes up the river after they're done fishing. I mean, is there a way to regulate which fish came out of which area?
They are on all of our harvest cards, our electronic licensing app. They have to put in where they caught the fish, the date they caught it, and the species. So that gives us an idea of where they're catching the fish, how many fish are being harvested in the ocean and in each river basin.
Now, if you see an overabundance of ocean salmon being caught, is there any way to regulate that as far as putting a restriction on it, or is that pretty much open water?
Well, for the recreational angler, there are regulations in place of 2 salmon per day. Commercial fisheries, those are managed very differently, and they typically have a trip limit, and it's not a real high number of fish that they can bring in. It can be 50 to 100 fish, depending on the year and the regulations that are agreed to. So everything is regulated to some point.
But most of the commercial fishing is done in the ocean, obviously, to get the most amount of the can in a catch, right?
Yeah, it's definitely more economical for them if they can get their limits or whatever their trip limits are in one trip.
Do you see any other fish that are in danger other than the coho and the chinook?
Well, even with coho, you know, the ocean is good. They are very much a boom and bust fish, and they seem to be coming up in abundance in the last couple of years. Steelhead is one. The last few years, it's been down region-wide. There's been concerns with it, and we all know the situation on the North Umpqua with wild summer steelhead. So I think when we look at the different species, steelhead starts dropping into those same categories. If they get a bad ocean, they go to the wrong place in the ocean, their survival drops, and then we have fewer fish coming back. And that starts creating some concerns for us of, you know, how do we, you know, spread out that harvest among all the anglers, and what is it telling us from a freshwater perspective and production, and are we seeing the ocean is really the main driver? And when we get these marine heat waves and poor marine conditions, it's pretty clear to us that the ocean is driving that survival and abundance.
Is any of this data cyclical, or is it a lot of it now to do with, you know, the changes and the global warming and that? Or do you see some cyclical things over the decades that, you know, every so many years you have a drop? Or is it just basically, you know, overfishing and bad weather conditions?
No, these salmon, they cycle around, and they go along with the cycles of the ocean. So it can be, you know, a 5-year cycle, a 10-year cycle. It really depends on how the ocean is cycling. So when we look back in the 60s and 70s, coho were everywhere in huge abundance, and the ocean had a prolonged period of really good productivity. We didn't see that in the 90s, and coho were listed, but then we've seen, you know, the ups and downs and cycles that go on with these fisheries. And I would expect, you know, chinook are in that same category. They cycle up and down.
Is there any indication that the Japanese earthquake and the subsequent radiation stuff, has that had any effect on this, or is that too far away to be concerned about over time?
It's really too far away. We haven't noticed anything, and I've seen no research that have come out that indicate that this downturn is a result of the earthquake in Japan.
All right. John Spangler, he's a Midcoast fish biologist with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I don't have any other questions unless there's something that you think I missed or need to know.
Well, if people have more questions or just want to get some more information, we did a webinar on June 7th that outlined the entire coast salmon fisheries for the fall, that they can go on to the ODF&W YouTube channel and look at the fall coastal salmon management program that was done on June 7th. They can get to that at myodfnw.com/articles/fall coastal salmon management.
All right, that's be a good thing for anglers to look at to see what the situation is. John Spangler, thank you so much for coming on today.
You bet, George, anytime you like.
All right, thank you. Hour 1 of Our Town Down, Hour 2 coming up next after news.